Athens is a city filled with amazing historical monuments, super hospitable people, and of course, delicious food. In today's interview, we discuss the ins and outs of Athens and what it's like to live there and what to expect from your trip. From visiting the Acropolis to eating moussaka, we cover all of the details. Let's get started. Thank you for listening, all of you travelers and foodists. This is the Nomadic Foodist Show. My name is Chris, your host, and I help people discover amazing food all around the world. On the show today, we have Tiffany from A Girl and Her Passport, which is a blog, and also she's been heavily invested in her YouTube channel where she discusses what it's like traveling the world and specifically with a focus on Greece. She has lived in Athens and she has experienced not only living there, but in other countries around the world too. And with such an experienced traveler who has adapted to many different cultures, it's nice to hear her stories from her time living in the area. When we think of history, Athens is always one of the cities that comes up as the most important, specifically in Western society. With historical landmarks literally just like everywhere, it can be a bit overwhelming to find out where you should go, how should you spend your time, and what you should eat. And we discuss all of those details in the episode, and it was really nice to hear Tiffany talk about what the people are like, and how great and hospitable they can be, and how welcoming the whole Greek culture is to not only their own society, but also with outsiders and tourists. If you're planning a trip to Greece and you're going to be flying into Athens and maybe staying a day or two, this is definitely your episode to make sure you maximize your time there. And most people come to Greece for the islands and that island life and the beauty that is there, but do not forget Athens, as Tiffany will go over all the important details so that you can spend your money on the right and the most important things, generally food. So here is my interview with Tiffany from agirlandherpassport.com. Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Let's go ahead and start off with an introduction. Tell us about yourself and a little bit about your blog.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. So I run a blog and actually a YouTube channel called A Girl and Her Passport. It started when I moved to Qatar for work, and I had already been running a blog, but it sort of had become irrelevant at that point. So I knew that I was going to be sharing a lot of my life, and I really thought that sharing it on Facebook wasn't really the best option. And so I decided to start my blog, and it kind of evolved into becoming more of a travel blog. And now that I live in Greece, its main focus is Greece, and sharing sort of both my life and also my travels in Greece.
For Qatar, I'm curious because we have flown to Qatar and just like went to the airport, and the airport's awesome. Like, it's super crazy there. And I was always curious what the country is like. So what was it like kind of transitioning over to that area?
Yeah, for sure. And that airport is my favorite airport in the world, by the way. So
yeah.
Let's see, transit, it wasn't always like that though, but that's a whole nother discussion because it used to be a really old, tiny, tiny airport when I first moved there. So I got to kind of experience the transition from this tiny little airport to this gigantic, massive hub. So let's see, moving there, it wasn't so much of a culture shock. I had already lived in another country, you know, and I expected it to be different. Like, I set myself up with the expectation that it was going to be massively different from everything I'd ever known. But having say that, I used to live in New York City, so I think I'm a lot more prepared for sort of the out of the ordinary and sort of multicultural like life. So there are a lot of people who live there that are from other countries. So the really cool thing was I got to meet people from everywhere without even having to go to their country. So I loved that. But there's always hardships when you live in another country. You know, everything doesn't work the way you expect it to, you know, just the normal things. And of course, you're still living your life. So you still got to go to the grocery store and fight traffic on your way to work and, you know, go to the pharmacy. So even though you're living in this exotic place, normal life still happens, even when you're an expat.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear. At least, though, I mean, it wasn't too unfamiliar and you could adjust decently well to those sort of changes. And Qatar's airport, I think this past year got like the best airport in the world, like award. I forgot which company like put out this award or whatever, but it got voted the best airport in the world. And it was funny. We actually are on this long trip through Europe and our first actual real country we visited was Greece. And before we went to Greece, we actually flew from DC and we actually did a stopover in Qatar. And that was a long one. It was like a 12-hour layover. And so we stayed at the airport like overnight and we didn't plan too much ahead. We were kind of like, oh, we'll just kind of hang out and like not get a hotel room or anything. And we tried to get a hotel room. We got really tired and we're all sold out. But it's like everything was open 24/7 in there. It was like 4 a.m. and Burberry was still like, you know, open and, you know, dishing out handbags and trench coats and stuff. So it was a pretty, pretty intense experience. And it was like, if there's an airport to be stuck at for, you know, 12 hours, like there's another one better than the one in Qatar. So I was happy to stay there for a long time.
Yeah, it's actually, and it's so luxuriously nice. Like even in like the regular parts of it, you don't really notice that you're in an airport. So
exactly,
it's one of the nicest airports. So, and next time you do that, you should know that you can get like a tour if you're there for a long enough period of time, and they'll take you around on like a bus. I think you have to be there for like 5 hours or more, but they'll take you around the city and give you like a little, I think it's just like a driving, like a bus type tour,
a
double-decker bus that you would see in like London or New York City. I haven't ever done it, but people say it's great and it's a good way to kill some time.
You know, that would have been awesome. I didn't look much into it. So next time, because every single time we've like flown out, like across the world, we've stopped over in Qatar. That was like our third time like stopping over. So like, hey, it's a great airport and Qatar Airways. You know, they had like killer prices too on their tickets. So I'm like, okay, we're just going to fly with them and it's good. So it's good how it ended out. Not too bad, but
good.
Yeah. So let's talk about a little bit of how you grew up, because I find that people who love food and travel, there's something rooted in, you know, when they were younger that ingrained them to kind of pursue this sort of life. So what were your earlier years like, and how did it influence your outlook on food and travel today?
Well, let's see. I am from Texas. So obviously get a lot of good food in Texas, you know, Tex-Mex, home of Tex-Mex. So that helped a lot. But I have my mother's parents were big travelers. And while they didn't take us on international trips, they always took us somewhere in the summer. I usually spent anywhere from 2 weeks to a month with my grandparents in the summer. So they were always taking us somewhere, you know, and it was usually on a road trip in a car. We very rarely flew anywhere. Like we would fly sometimes to my grandparents and then they would take us on the trip. So when I was a kid, when I was really little, actually, when I was a baby, my mother would fly up with me on Southwest Airlines, probably. And it was obviously pre-9/11. So you could just walk up to the gates. So my mom would fly up. It's like a 30-minute flight and walk off the plane. My grandparents would be there waiting. She would hand me off to them. And then she would literally get on the next flight. And back then, I think there was probably a flight like once every hour. You know, flying was so much different then. And then she would do the same. She would fly back up and pick me back up. But all this travel with my parents and my grandparents isn't really the thing that like sparked the travel like bug, surprisingly enough, even though I always have enjoyed it. I used to live in the third place, which is the Turks and Caicos Islands. I moved there briefly for about 3 months to volunteer at a museum. And I met all these other expats who were living abroad so that they could travel. And that's when I had this moment of, that's what I want to do. I want to live in another country and travel all over the world. Because they had all these amazing stories about all these places they had been. And that's kind of the thing that sparked the travel bug that I can't seem to get rid of now.
Wow. What was it like in the Turks and Caicos Islands?
Now, that was kind of a culture shock.
Yeah.
I didn't move to the main island. The main island is Providenciales, which is quite a large island. and has a big international airport. I moved to the capital island, surprisingly, not the main island, where there's about 2,500 people. It's a mile long, a mile wide, and 7 miles long. It's tiny. And there is nothing to do there. You go to the beach, there are about 5 restaurants and a tiny museum, and a cruise ship or two comes every couple of days. I think now it's a lot busier, but when I was there, there was like a cruise ship every 2 or 3 days. And suddenly we would have this influx of people. So it was great though. I had just left New York City from living there for 7 years. And it was a nice, like totally put the brakes on. I'm like rushing around Manhattan for 7 years to go to this tiny island that's, you know, like a minuscule drop in Manhattan size. So it was, there's not even a stoplight on that island. And I think there are very few stop signs.
Oh, geez. That is like, that is out there. That is quite a difference, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, because Turks and Caicos, I've actually always wanted to visit because I've been to the Bahamas a few times and, you know, been through the other parts of, you know, Mexico and the Caribbean area. And that's one set of islands that look really nice. So I was like, maybe I should make that a trip too. Like, would you recommend that for a nice tropical vacation for people?
Oh, definitely. I mean, especially if you like diving, it is an amazing diving, even snorkeling. If you love to be a beach bum, it's perfect. Like it's, the sand is white and soft and the water is perfectly, it's like the perfect temperature to go swimming in. Like it's cool enough to be refreshing and it's not hot. So it is very hot there, but the peak time to go is like January, February, because it's not as hot. And obviously hurricane season is over.
That's something to keep in mind. People don't realize they see really good like rates and flights and everything to like head over to the Caribbean like in like October and November. It's like because hurricane season, that's like the middle of it. Oh, I couldn't imagine.
Not only is it hurricane season, it's the hottest time of the year there because that's when the winds die. Yeah. So I'm sure that you've watched pirate movies and you hear of the doldrums. Well, that's when the winds die. So not only is it super hot, then it's also very humid because the wind that was blowing the humidity away has now come and it's just kind of miserable. And that's when I was there. So
of course.
Now I love the heat, but that's, you know, that's not everyone's cup of tea for sure.
Wow. Sounds like you've been on some great adventures and I'm excited to talk about Greece here in a second, but through everything you've experienced in all your travels and your life, I mean, why is it so important for you to be sharing your adventures with the world?
Well, for one thing, I feel like there are parts of the places that I've visited, particularly when I moved to the Turks and Caicos and when I moved to Qatar, like those are not places that people are going to necessarily go to on vacation. And they do have, particularly when it comes to Qatar, these very preconceived notions or just only know what they've been told. And I think it's important for me to share that so that they know that it's, because my thing about traveling is that yes, we're different in a lot of ways, but in the basic sense of being a human, we're all very similar. You know, we all need food. We all need shelter and we all need to like make money in some way. And that's universal, whether your money is actual money or if it's something else, but your basic needs as a human are all the same. And I think we tend to forget about that, that even though a culture may be pretty different from yours, like we still all have the basic needs and wants that every other human does. And I think that's an important thing to share, that just because we are different, we're still very much the same and that we should treat each other that way.
No, absolutely. And I think when people find the world is like too dangerous or too scary to travel, I think sometimes we forget that, yeah, we all need the same things and we all have the same basic needs and desires. You know, we do need, just like you said, food, shelter, and our basic needs. And really most people all around the world, I found strangers to be particularly nice. And it challenges me sometimes too, because I don't think I would have been that nice to a lot of people if I approached them in the same situations. And I have other friends too, I've made traveling, who've just told me these outrageous stories of people helping people who just need help, just complete strangers. And I think that right there shows a hope for humanity that sometimes gets glossed over when we just like read the news and we think we can't travel, we can't do things because the world's too scary of a place to explore, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I hope that what little I'm sharing is it gets that message across. And also, you know, I want to help people overcome that. Like, I want people to go to these places. I don't want them to say, oh, I don't want to go there because it's too scary, or I'll be by myself and I won't know what to do. No, you can do it. You know, I'm not saying you have to go on this grand adventure by yourself for the first time, but work your way up to it. You could get there.
Absolutely. And it takes time. And I think, you know, what you're doing is really good. It's very notable because when some of that mystery is taken out of the place of what's behind the curtain, what's it like to live there? What's it like to eat there? What are the people like? What are the sights like? Then they kind of understand they're watching you and they're like, oh, if she can do it and if she says it's really good, then maybe I can do it and I can enjoy it as well. So I think those are the ambitions, I think, of a lot of us. And I think you're doing a good job. So keep doing it, especially when it comes to Greece. And we're going to move on now to our main topic of conversation, which is Athens. And I have to tell you, I was really excited to talk about Athens because when we went to Athens, I actually did not have the best time. So I am eager to hear your perspective on it because I want to go back, but maybe I just went at the wrong time of year, or maybe of the COVID situation. I'm not too sure. It was just, the food was okay. And I think maybe I took some bad advice from people like while I was there. So first, let's just start off with, why is Athens so special to you? Like, why did you choose that place to live?
First off, I didn't actually choose Athens. Athens sort of chose me. I was living on an island, actually the island I'm on now, of Naxos. And I could not find an apartment here for the whole year. That's a very common problem in the Greek islands. And so after a couple of months, I decided to go traveling. And then I came back and I was like, well, I'm just going to live in Athens because it's a big city and I'll find an apartment there. And it's close to the islands and it's better than being in the US. That was sort of my sort of default. And I had never thought I would ever live in a big city again. I haven't lived in a big city other than being from Dallas, but I hadn't lived since New York City. And since then I have lived in the Caribbean and Qatar. And I thought, I can't live in a big city. Like I will be lost. But I did it anyway. And I fell in love with it. I've been on Naxos for 2 months now and I had to go back over the weekend. And I was like, I don't want to go back. I want to stay in Athens. Athens has this sort of vibe to it that when you live there, you sort of feel like each little neighborhood is like its own little island. Everybody gets to know each other. And even if they don't know your name, they see you all the time. So they say hello to you. They go around saying good morning in Greek to you. So you kind of have this really small community feel in every neighborhood. And actually Athens is set up that way. Almost every neighborhood has its own square. And so each neighborhood has this feeling of like community. And Greece is like that everywhere. It's not just in Athens. Like, people live here to be outside, even in the winter. So you're going to go to a square in Athens and you will see in January, and people will be sitting outside having a coffee with the little heaters and probably wearing like 500 layers of clothing. But yeah. They love to sit outside and they talk to the same people every day. They probably have been talking to this person for the last 50 years of their life, but this is their community. And once they start to recognize you, they say hello to you, you know, ask you how you are. Even if they don't talk to you, they wave, they smile. And it's just a different feeling than you're ever going to get in almost any big city in the States, you know, like, even I would say in a lot of European countries, because I do love Europe. Like, I love the cafe lifestyle where you go and you sit outside and you people watch. But here it's just on a whole nother level of friendly. And that's just the Greek way. Like, they just have, this is just the way they do it. I actually had a subscriber say to me on my most recent video that they happened to be in Athens during the flooding. We had a lot of flooding last week. And they couldn't go anywhere. They were literally stuck on a street where the water was probably up to their ankles. And some shop owners said, come in, sit down. They made them tea. They gave them liquor and made them stay until the storm had stopped. Greek person is going to let you stand out there in the freezing cold rain getting wet. Like, that's just, they're not going to do that. So it's kind of this sense of community that makes Athens really special. And I feel like even though the Greek islands are somewhat that way, Athens has a different feel about it because you don't have to be friendly to people in the city, but they are.
And that's refreshing to hear. I don't even know like half my neighbors, like where I live in Denver. So it's good to hear that they take that community very seriously. And if you're part of it long enough, then I guess you can be absorbed in that community too. And that's really nice to have that sort of hospitality towards strangers again. Like, that is awesome to see them going out of their way to help each other. And I think that's what makes a place special, you know, for someone to live, you know. And I don't know, I guess just like you mentioned with the states not being as nice in big cities, I definitely understand that. It's more of a fend for yourself in a lot of big cities in the US, which is a shame, but it's just the reality of it. And it's nice to hear that there are some really nice places that kind of go against that.
Yeah, it's definitely a different feel from, you know, the US and even from the rest of Europe. So I really like it. It's the Greeks are just so friendly and they want you to enjoy it here. It's not like, oh, they're being nice to you because they want something from you. They genuinely want you to enjoy their country and because I love it. And they're like, oh, that's the best reason to live here.
Oh, awesome. Well, why should people pick like Athens over other really more notable, I guess, European places? Because, I mean, Athens is on the people's list, but I feel like a lot of my friends, they would either go to like, I don't know, Paris or Rome or something. But why should Athens be the one they pick for sure?
Well, Athens is at this point the oldest, not the oldest, but one of the oldest cities in the world. So, I mean, that has a lot going for it. Almost everywhere you turn, there is an archaeological ruin of some kind. And I'm not kidding. So during the very first lockdown in Greece, of course, I happened to move to Greece right during all of this. And I was out walking. I walked every day because I was bored and I didn't really know anyone in Athens. And I happened to live on a hill. And I was walking down to the end of my street and I found a ruin. It's called Hadrian's Reservoir. And it is the original place for the water of ancient Athens and even some modern day Athens used to be supplied by this reservoir. And it was just at the end of my street. There's just a small sign. It's not, you know, it's not this big thing, but what's really cool. So then you have this reservoir and we're up on this hill. So it makes sense, right? But then if you turn around, you can see the Parthenon between these two buildings down the street.
Oh, right.
And I just thought to myself, like, if I lived here in the ancient time, none of these buildings would be here. And I could see straight down into the heart of Athens from being up on this hill. I don't know. Part of it for me is I'm kind of a history geek. And so I'm like, oh, can you imagine building this with no tools and no machinery and no electricity and to have the ingenuity and forethought to think, oh, yes, if we put this up here, then the water will naturally flow down the hill to provide us fresh water with. So anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. But literally, like even in the metro stations, there are archaeological ruins. Because as they were building the metro for the 2004 Olympics, of course, they're finding all these things. And because they have found so much, they can't put it into a museum. There's just too much stuff. So they've just left them in place and preserved them. So you can literally walk into almost any metro station and see a little museum in Athens.
And you aren't exaggerating. I have witnessed this like myself with all over the city. It really is. All of a sudden, you see some like old like rocks and pillars. You're like, what is this? Like, is this supposed to be here? Is this real? Or is it like, you know, are we on like some sort of like movie set? Like, cause it's really cool to just stumble upon these little things.
Yeah. And it's usually like a piece of the city wall or they're like, oh, this was so-and-so's house. And you're like, how do you know these things? That's always my thing. I'm like, how did you figure that out? Like, it's kind of amazing to me. And they're building a new metro line They've just started. So let's see what we find in the next 10 years here.
Oh, yeah. So besides the history and like the food, what other notable things culturally is really unique to Athens?
Well, I'm sure you noticed when you were visiting the street art. And yes, there is a lot of graffiti. And I know that puts a lot of people off Athens. However, if you escape all the graffiti and look up, there's a lot of amazing street art in Athens. And it's massive. There's an artist called Eno Expo, and he paints entire sites of buildings. And he has to use repellent, you know, like repels. And he's sort of Banksy-like because he has never really said who he is. And in any video that he's in or that he shoots himself, he never shows his face. And a lot of them have political sort of connotations to them. Like they all have meaning and they're huge and they're everywhere. And he's not the only one. There are several others as well. I happen to have a thing for street art. I look for it in every city that I go to. But in Athens, I don't even have to look for it. It's just there. And Athens has sort of embraced it as like this thing that they're really proud of. Yeah. So like he's been, it's not like he's doing this, you know, on the sly, because there's no way you could paint these buildings, you know, without permission. So, you know, Athens has sort of taken it and gone, you know what, we're going to embrace this part. I'm sure they would wish the graffiti would go away, but there's some really amazing pieces around Athens. And I actually love going and finding, he's created a few new pieces while I've been away, and I can't wait to go find them because he kind of tells you where they are, but he doesn't exactly tell you where they are. So I've been watching the videos going, okay, where is the Acropolis in this video? So I can figure out which part of it is. So the other thing I really love about Athens, and it really only happens in the summer, but there are what they call summer cinema. And basically there are all these outdoor movie theaters in Athens. There are on the island, on some of the islands as well. And obviously they're only open in the summer when it's nice and warm, but it is like the thing to do. It is a very Athenian thing to do, to go to the outdoor summer cinema. Some of them show modern movies, but there's one in the neighborhood of Theseo that mostly shows older movies. And earlier this summer, I saw Casablanca there.
Oh, and wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Not only that, you could see the Parthenon all lit up just over the edge of the wall of the theater. So you kind of have this like surreal experience of sitting in a very modern thing, a movie theater, and seeing something that's 2,500 years old out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah. It's, I bet it was quite the picturesque moment for sure.
Oh, yeah. So, I love going there.
Yeah. So with Athens and all the travelers that come all around the world to visit and see all the sites, there's generally certain places in every single big tourist city where I think maybe people should avoid. Maybe the food's not very good. Maybe it's overpriced. Maybe there's like other tourist traps in the area. Is there any place like that in Athens for you that maybe travelers should maybe stay away from?
Well, so the main touristy areas are Monastiraki, which is a main square, and then there's Plaka, which is right next to it. So you have this weird sort of dichotomy in that neighborhood, in those two neighborhoods, because one is they're very touristy, right? But they are the oldest parts of Athens. And so a lot of the archaeological ruins and things are in that area. So you get some very traditional restaurants that you will want to eat at, but then there are the ones that I'm like, don't eat there, please, because, you know, like it's going to be overpriced. It might be good. Just because it's overpriced in Athens doesn't mean that it's not good and that it's touristy. It's just they're charging you. And it's going to be subtle in Greece because like they don't know better enough to say, oh, we're going to charge you unless you go to Mykonos, you know, like they're not so savvy, you know. So my good rule of thumb is A, look for Greek people who are eating the restaurant, not just working in the restaurant. And there'll always be Greek people working in the restaurant, but see if there are Greeks sitting outside eating and they're not just sitting there having coffee and smoking, like that they're actually eating the food, because Greeks will pretty much sit down and have a coffee and a smoke anywhere. So that's a good rule of thumb. The other thing is, just like in any city, if there's someone outside trying to get you to come into the restaurant, it's not a good idea.
Yes. I stand behind that rule for sure. That I haven't had a good meal from someone who's done that. I've been, you know, went to a restaurant like that in a long time, but every time I have, it's been okay. You know, it's like,
yeah, I mean, it's usually in Greece, I've never had just horrible food, but usually it's just kind of mediocre and like probably like a euro or two more than you would have paid maybe the next street over, you know, that's the thing about Athens is Athens looks like this gigantic city, and it is because all of the suburbs have sort of merged into one, but really Athens is quite small and like you can walk everywhere you want to go pretty easily. So walk another street over and find something else.
Yes. And for me, it's all about that valuable real estate in your stomach. You know, you want to fill it up with delicious food if you can find it, you know, even if it's only like a couple blocks over, two blocks over, boom, easy, easy.
And then you can just order another dessert because you walked a little bit further.
Yes, you earned it. So what are the traditional foods to like Athens that, you know, people should definitely try, and maybe a few of the, you know, your favorite restaurants where they can find these traditional foods?
Sure. Well, so there's very traditional Greek food, and it's kind of traditional everywhere. If you go to some of the islands, they'll have some very specific dishes. Athens tends to be a little more of a melting pot. So, you know, you got to have moussaka. I'm sure that everyone has seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and the little girl goes to lunch and and the girls in the cafeteria are like, "What are you eating?" And it sounds like moussaka, and it's actually moussaka. And actually it's amazing. So especially if you're like a big, like hearty food, you want something, it's kind of, I call it like the Greek lasagna. Greeks are going to kill me for saying that, but it's nothing like lasagna. It has no flavor like lasagna, but it's got that layered feeling to it. So it's, and I'm probably going to get the layers of this wrong, but basically it's like ground beef. So it's either like ground beef or pork, depending on, usually it's beef. If it's pork, they usually say in the menu or they'll tell you. And then eggplant, and then bechamel sauce. And it kind of depends, you know, how every restaurant and every island makes it a little bit differently.
This is true.
Those are the basic things that you, and you can get it at almost every restaurant anywhere. And I like to try it at different places because like, you know, it's different everywhere. And like one time, oh, there's also potatoes in it. And one time I had it and I swear that it was sweet potatoes instead of regular potatoes. And it was so good. And sometimes you'll get it and it's been made in an entire pan, you know, like as a big casserole, or they've made it in its own little clay pot and it's bubbling over with cheese, you know, the bechamel cheese on the top, and it's got like a crust to it. So it's a little bit different everywhere. So if you try it once and you really like it, I suggest trying it in multiple places because it's going to be different every time.
Yeah,
not always, you know, the flavor you want it to be, but it's, you know, it's good. One of my most favorite thing is zucchini balls, or sometimes you'll see it as zucchini croquettes. So usually, and my favorite kind are the kind that they don't form too like tightly. Basically, they've shredded zucchini, they've put feta and mint and dill, and sometimes carrots and sometimes onions. Again, it depends on who's making it. And they've fried it in a pan. And usually they bring it out with tzatziki sauce, and it is so good. And usually they bring you like five, and you're thinking to yourself, I now have to eat the rest of my food too. So my favorite ones are not in Athens, so that's unfortunate, but I'm on the hunt for some really good ones in Athens. I found some really good ones in the port of Piraeus once, because I like them to be a little less formed, and a lot of the ones in Athens are more like a patty, but I love them. I mean, they're so good no matter where I've had them. Another thing that I've had that I love, and I've only had this in one place, and it's in Athens, and it's in one of those touristy areas, but I'm telling you, it's okay to eat there. So the restaurant is called Othanasis. And if you go to Monastiraki Square and you turn around and you keep the Acropolis Hill on your right and you head up that main street, it's that street right there. And they make a thing called a yogurt kebab. So it's a kebab in like a pan on top of some pita bread. And then of course topped with Greek yogurt, which has like oregano and other spices in it and a little bit of tomato sauce. And it's the cheapest thing you can probably get other than like Slovaki, but it's amazing. And it's huge. Yeah. And it's huge. So like you could eat that for dinner. Actually, I went on a date there once and my date and I shared it, and that was enough for both of us. So it's amazing. And I love it. Now, I do have another thing that I love that's not meat related for those, for the vegetarians. It's called imam, and Turkish people will tell you that it's Turkish. Greek people will tell you that it's Greek.
Of course.
Of course. So it's basically like a baked eggplant, and then they put tomato sauce, and then they put feta cheese on top, and they bake it that way. And it's amazing.
It sounds great. No, like I'm not a big fan of eggplant, but ever since I started traveling to a few of these places, like actually in Turkey and also in, where was it else? Like I had some really good eggplant. It was in Tirana, Albania, and now Greece as well, with like moussaka for me was awesome. Like I'm right there with you, like super good. Like finding new ways to have eggplant, you'd be surprised how delicious it can really be, especially when they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And you just saying that just made my mouth kind of water. I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm craving eggplant. Oh no.
I've actually tried to teach myself how to cook it. And I'm like, okay, I've got a long ways to go here. Cause this is not like what I've had in a restaurant. So, yeah. And I have a few other restaurant suggestions, and, you know, not so much, that you can't get these dishes at those places, but you can kind of, except for maybe the kebab with the yogurt, you can get almost all of these somewhere at one of these three places. So one of them is called Piroliki, which I even asked the Greek person that I was with at the time what that meant, and he wasn't exactly sure, but I'm pretty sure it means little fire. And it is this lovely I've only eaten there outdoors because that's all I've been ever allowed to do during this time of being in Athens, but it's perfectly fine. They have a wonderful garden, and you go there and it's like a very traditional family owned Greek restaurant. And you're only going to see Greeks there. You won't find tourists there because it's not in the touristy part of Athens. So it's just Greeks. And that's when you know it's really good. And people go there and they sit there for hours. And then another place is called, this is a new place. It opened last May when we were finally allowed to eat in a restaurant again, and it's called Berbilo. And when I send you it's spelled with an M and a P, but that's because M and P in Greek make a B sound because there's no B in Greek.
Gotcha. Okay. confusing.
Yes. It took me about a year before I realized that of living here. Like there are certain letters together. If you look at them in the signs and you're thinking to yourself, well, that doesn't make that sound. That's because in Greek, it makes an entirely different sound. And I had the most amazing pork dish there of my life. Now, granted, I hadn't eaten at a restaurant in about 6 months, but yeah, it was like they had cooked the pork all day long and it literally just fell apart on the plate.
Fabulous. Yes.
Yeah. And there was this group of Greek people sitting next to me, and the man turns to me, starts speaking to me, and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, oh gosh. And I'm like, sorry, I don't speak that much Greek. And he was like, okay. And he turns to the waiter and he says something to me. He says, my friend here would like to buy you a drink. I said, okay. You know, and for most women, you think to yourself, oh no, what's going to happen? Nope. He never talked, you know, he said a few things to me after that, but it was just, he just wanted me to have a drink.
Oh,
maybe because I was eating by myself. I don't know, but it was a very interesting, experience.
Just being nice.
Maybe thought that just being Greek.
Yeah. Just being Greek. That's a good way to put it. Yes.
Yeah. And then my other favorite place to eat at, and they actually have several locations around Athens, is called Jijigas and Myrmigas.
Okay.
I know it's a mouthful, but basically it's the fable of the cicada and the ant. And they've named it after this fairy tale, which I think is an Aesop's fable, but apparently it's also a Greek fable about something about, I can't remember who, one of them wants to work all summer and get stuff done and the other wants to be lazy. It's sort of like the tortoise and the hare, but you know.
Gotcha.
So this restaurant has this very traditional like feel to it. It almost feels like an island taverna, and that's what I really like about it. It has this very light interior, and it actually is in like the style of an old Greek grocery store. So it's very cute. And the original one is way up in a neighborhood that like most tourists would never go to. But there is one really close to Syntagma Square, the main square in Athens.
I'm not sure if this is just my experience, but I feel like the portions were pretty hefty whenever I ate out in Athens. Is that like a normal thing, or they just want to stuff the American full of food?
No, that's pretty normal. I mean, you know, I did go out to eat dinner last night here in Naxos, and it wasn't a significant portion, which I was kind of happy about. Yeah. But I have found that like, if you order a Greek salad here, it's going to be massive.
Enormous.
They're going to bring it to you with an entire block of feta cheese. And you're thinking to yourself, what have I gotten myself into? It's supposed to be a salad. So yeah. And the thing is Greeks tend to order. So this is what I have kind of figured out. Like, so when I go to eat with my Greek friends, it's very different. You know, they want to order like four or five things and everybody has to share. So I think that's part of the reason
is because,
you know, I think when Greeks go to dinner, they don't say, oh, I'm going to have the moussaka. She's going to have the pizzitio and he's going to have this. Like everybody's going to order something and we're all going to share it, you know, and God forbid you tell a Greek person you're not hungry. But if I order something, you'll share it with me. And I'm like, but I'm not really hungry. And then when you say no, they give you a hard time. So, yeah, don't ever go out with Greeks if you're not hungry.
Good to know. Yeah. Quite a few times I'm just like surprised. And the Greek salads are really enormous and the Greek salads are delicious. It was actually probably one of my favorite things, even though it was super simple, it was just done perfectly. So you're like, it's just what, tomatoes, cucumbers, green peppers, onions, capers, and a big old block of feta cheese all drizzled in olive oil and then sprinkled with oregano. It was just, I don't know how they thought about making this combination, right? But it was just perfect. We ate that with every single meal, my wife and I. Just we had to get Greek salad. So and the moussaka, when you said like they bake it in like a casserole kind of dish, you know, in a single pan and they cut some out. That's the first time I had it. And I feel like they gave me a quarter of the pan as the portion. So I'm like it felt like it weighed like 5 pounds. I'm sure it wasn't that much, but it felt like it. I'm like, and we ordered this with like a whole bunch of other food too. So I felt bad. I can only eat like half of it. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is like so much food. And it was fun though. It was fun to kind of have that sort of like flood of food come out at you.
Yeah. And it's definitely, you think, okay, I've ordered a salad and this thing and it'll be fine. And then you're like, wait a minute, it comes out. And you're like, how am I going to eat all this? And you end up, this is part of the reason that Greeks have to stay so long at a restaurant, because they have to make it through all this food, I think. So, I mean, it is a nice thing though, to go to a restaurant and know that if you just want to sit there for like 4 hours, they're probably not going to ask you to leave. Like it's all right. This thing that I love about living here. I mean, it can be a little bit frustrating because sometimes you're like, well, I just want to go. And you're like hailing the waiter down, trying to get them to bring you the check. And they're not ignoring you. They're just not concerned. So they haven't come and they're not looking at you because they're doing something else. So, you know, it's kind of nice. Like even by myself, like last night I went to dinner and I took a book and finally I was like, oh, I should probably leave now. You know, I should go home because they just didn't care. In fact, when I was leaving, they were like, are you sure we'll give you a free glass of wine if you want to stay? And I'm like, no, thank you.
Well, that's so good though. Well, that's good to know too, because Americans have this bad habit, including myself, of, okay, I'm done eating. I'm ready to go. Give you my check now. When things move at a different pace in that way, it really is just, they won't really come to you unless you flag them down. And then even after that, because they are busy too, but it's part of that etiquette as well of like, hey, we're going to take our time, I guess, like eating and enjoying our meal. So we know we're not trying to rush you situation. That's how I felt at least.
Yeah. They're definitely not trying to rush you. And most likely they're probably making something to bring to you that's complimentary. So usually at a Greek restaurant, not so much in the city, although in some of the places that I've mentioned, they do it. They'll bring you either a little dessert or they will bring you fresh watermelon if it's the summer, Or if you want, a lot of places will bring you a drink like either ouzo or raki to sort of help you digest, as they say. So don't be surprised if when they bring you the check, or if you think they're bringing you the check, they're probably actually bringing you a big fat plate of watermelon.
Yes. Well, that was the common thing that we got when we ate. It was August. And yeah, they brought out like quite a few times, like a watermelon. I'm like, okay, let's eat some watermelon. This is good.
Yeah. So, and actually, it was funny because I'm staying near a very traditional tavern on Naxos. And the other day, they were getting their delivery and there were a bunch of watermelons. And I was like, okay, it's still watermelon season.
Yeah, and it's funny because we haven't had, goodness, I haven't tried raki since I was in Istanbul like last year. It's not my kind of thing. Is ouzo kind of the same thing? It's like a liqueur or just like a distilled liquor, really, that tastes kind of like licorice. Is that ouzo?
It's
Okay.
very similar to the raki. So there's ouzo, raki, and then there's another one that I'm not even going to attempt to say because I don't pronounce this Greek syllable correctly. So, and they're all really strong. And usually the ouzo, I'm sure. So sometimes they'll bring you like a shot. Usually that's either ouzo or raki. Sometimes they'll say, oh, would you like an ouzo? And they'll bring it to you with a little bit of ice and water. And then that's when you can tell because it's kind of cloudy. In the winter, though, if you want to have a really cool drink and you're cold, you can get what they call a rocamelo, which is a raki with honey served hot.
I've never heard of that. That's pretty cool. Is it good?
Yeah. It will make hair grow on your chest. Let's just put it that
Good. All right. Sounds like my kind of drink, but
It's not a thing that if you have just a small glass of it, that's going to get you drunk, but it burns going down. And I actually had it when I had a cold, and I swear it just scared the cold right out of me. The cold was like, and I'm out. Thanks. Goodbye.
Maybe we should try that for remedies, for being sick. Just that would do it, I feel. Oh
It
man.
might have been the honey, but I don't know. But I was like, okay, I don't have a cold anymore. I'm good. So, it's definitely an acquired taste. Like I think if you're here long enough and you try it a lot, people do really like it. Like I know people who come here every year and they love ouzo and they want to have it. Like, no, thank you. Like I don't like licorice either. So, that has a lot to do with it. So the raki doesn't have as strong, and it's not made in the same way, and it's made with a totally different raki is actually leftover wine skins. So, and it's distilled in a different way, but it sort of still has that very strong like liqueur flavor to it, and it's just not for me. So that was part of the reason last night the restaurant was like, oh, can we bring you a glass of wine? And I was like, oh, thank you. Like I'm gonna end up with raki instead, and I'm gonna have to say no. That's the other thing I will tell you is that a lot of people are afraid to come, and when they go to a restaurant, especially if they're bringing liquor out to not either if they're asked or if they're brought, they're worried about offending people. And I would say that if you don't want to drink it, just don't drink it. Like the Greeks are not going to be offended if you don't drink it.
That's
And
good. That's good.
if they come out and they ask you and you say no, they're not going to be offended either. So I think a lot of people are like, but it's free and I don't want to see, ungrateful. Don't worry about it. Like you're just saving them money. Because they're not having to pour you this glass. So it's just traditional. Like it's just a thing. It's not meant to mean anything
Good,
other than
good.
to say thank
Yeah. Well, that's good to know too, because sometimes, rejecting someone's hospitality can be taken as offensive. So it's good that we can reject if we're not up for the taste. One last question. What about something to do? I know the whole Acropolis is generally the highlight of attractions for people to see. So in your opinion, like, is it worth going? Is this something that everyone should really make time for?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I know it's a thing that, people see it and they're like, okay, it's just an ancient ruin, but you have to consider that they built this thing on top of a significantly large hill, 2,500 years ago. And not only is it still there, it's been attacked many times. things have been stripped off of it. And it's just this amazing site. And not so, okay, if you don't like ancient ruins and you could care less, go for the view. You can see all the way to the sea from there. So, and you can see all of Athens. It's this amazing view of this stretched out city that reaches from the hills behind you all the way down to the sea. And it looks like when you're up there, it looks like the entire city is made up of white buildings. Obviously, that's not the case. But because of the way that Athens is constructed, it does give this, because most buildings are either white or sort of a pale yellow or beige, it gives this appearance that the entire city is white. And it's sort of this amazing thing. And if you can go up there and then get on a ferry and turn around and watch Athens like dissolve in the sunset, you're going to see that white thing happen again. And for me, I just think it's amazing and beautiful. People, there are people who've looked at me like, oh, you think Athens is beautiful? And I'm like, yes, but I love it. So
no, you are right. You know? It's a really beautiful sight. I loved the Acropolis and seeing the Parthenon. And with people who like history, you have to think about how many people have stood where you are now, like over the past, you know, a couple thousand years it's been here. It's pretty cool to kind of think about it. And I really liked the Acropolis Museum too, to really go through the fine details of everything that's there and the kind of artistic reconstructions that they do and all that sort of stuff. Like that was well worth the money. And I would be right there to recommend people maybe going to the museum before they go to the Acropolis, because I like knowing those sort of facts, and it's just, it's well done. It's very well curated. Yes. And then going to the Acropolis is just, it's always fantastic. It really was the highlight of my time in Athens for sure.
Yeah. The museum is amazing, and it's a stunningly beautiful museum. They've made a, you know, you've got this beautiful, all these pieces, and then you can see the Acropolis as you're in it. So it's a really nice setup. It actually used to be up on the top of the hill. And obviously that was not big enough. So they've moved it and built this beautiful building. That's an area I would suggest that you not eat in, though. That street right next to the Acropolis Museum is very touristy, and the prices are outrageous. So there are good food. There is good food there, but the food is, it's very expensive right there. So, but do try, if you want to sit and enjoy the Acropolis, the cafe in the Acropolis is a nice place to sit. It's got great views, and you don't have to deal with like tourists walking by. You kind of get this relaxed feeling of Athens and getting to look at the Acropolis while you're out there. So if you want to stay inside and like, well, you can sit outside too, but it's a nice place to sit.
Yeah, I would recommend for people to find a rooftop bar, and in the evening sometime, if it's, you know, warm enough, to enjoy a drink or to have dinner on some sort of rooftop bar, because the Acropolis is like, it's all lit up. It's beautiful to see. It makes for a really unique backdrop that you really can't find anywhere else in the world like that. I loved it.
Yeah. What I love, so my best advice is, so there's a bar called A is for Athens at the top of a hotel. Actually, it is a restaurant. I've never had great there. The drinks are good, but the view is amazing. So my suggestion is actually go a little before sunset. Now the sunset does set behind you because it's on the other side of the Acropolis, but it creates this light on the Acropolis that happens when the sun sets. And you have to go on a clear day. Don't do it on a cloudy day. This won't happen, but you'll get to see the Acropolis have this natural glow. And then you'll get to see what the ancient Athenians saw. Then the sun will go down, and then all the lights will come on, and it'll be this beautiful modern thing. And I don't know when you came, but last June or July, I can't remember the exact date, they redid all of the lights at the Acropolis, and now it's even brighter and more beautiful than it was before.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I came in August this year, so it was beautiful. Like I really enjoyed like just sitting out there, and it sounds like boring, but just looking at the Acropolis, you know, from wherever we were. It's a good marker for just, you know, walking and traveling, but it's beautiful to look at. And it's very, very well done to enjoy the scenery and enjoy the city as it is. So we are now at our time limit. And if it's okay, one more question. What's like your favorite memory from your time there in Athens?
Well, I when you sort of prefaced this before we talked, I was like, okay, what am I going to, I mean, I love living there and everything has been sort of great, but I have to say, so like a lot of people, we were in lockdown last spring, and I didn't really know many people here in Athens. I know a lot of people in other parts of Greece at the time, but I didn't at that point. And in February, it snowed, which is highly unusual.
Yeah,
And it didn't just
wow.
snow like a little bit, it snowed a lot. And so I woke up early, and because I had heard that it might be snowing heavily, like I had seen some things like on social media like late into the evening. So I got up early, and Greek people are not early people. So I was out of the house by like 7 a.m. And I went out and I got to see Athens sort of in this freshly fallen snow. And it was beautiful. Like it was just like this thing that I thought I would never see, and I probably may never see it like this again because the snow was like so much snow. And it's one of my favorite things, and like that would never happen in the summer. I would never get that experience if I was just coming to visit here in the summer. So it's and it was exciting for me because I was kind of really bored at that point and thought, why did I move here? I kind of wandered around my neighborhood, and then later in the day I went down to Syntagma Square, because if you've been to Athens, I know you have, but if your listeners have been or haven't been, so the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier is right in front of Parliament, and that's actually what Syntagma means. Syntagma is, well, it's actually the Constitution, but Parliament and Constitution all right there. So the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier is there in front of Parliament, and there are two soldiers that stand out there 24 hours a day, every day of the year, and they're called evzones, and they're in traditional Greek military uniforms. And I thought, oh my gosh, those poor soldiers, what are they experiencing? So every hour they changed them. And that was really difficult in the snow because it was really wet snow. And so they actually brought them down in a car, which is totally unusual. They normally walk down from their barracks to this station. And they stand there, and normally they walk up and have this whole ceremony, but it was too dangerous. So one soldier would hold on to them, walked them up there, moved the other guy out of the way, put him in the position, put the guy's coat on him, and then walked him back down to the other one who was relieved of duty to go back into the car. I don't know, for me it was just sort of this like experience that I'm never going to see again, the snow. And then these soldiers having to be sort of like basically carried almost to this car, not because they can't do it, but because it's too dangerous. But it's so important to the Greeks to know that they're there. So like I made a video about this, and that's one thing people were asking me before the video that came out. They're like, how are the soldiers doing down in Syntagma? They wanted to know, because
Oh,
they're Greeks that
yeah.
live everywhere, and they wanted to know how they were doing. They wanted to know that they were okay. So, and because they're young men, they're like, they're in their, usually Greeks have to serve before they're 24 in the army. And so, or not the army, navy, whatever service they've belonged to. And they have to do it for, I think it's 6 months now, before the age of 24. And this is a very special honor to be chosen to be one of these soldiers. So everybody is super conscious of them and loves them. And so, I
Wow,
kind of didn't know
yeah.
about that until I had this snow experience and people were asking me about it. And I was like, oh, this is more important than I thought it was. So it was kind of, it's a learning experience for me, right? Like every moment, even though it seems silly, like, oh, it's just snow, but it actually kind of taught me some really important things about Greece.
Yeah, it's such a special moment. And yeah, just like you said, who knows when you can experience and witness everything that you saw and had the chance to see. So, wow, put that one in the books as very, very special for sure. I
Yes.
mean, I couldn't imagine what, all the buildings and everything, what it looked like all white, everywhere. That must have been very, very cool.
It was wild. So when I was telling you earlier about walking down to the end of my street where I can see the Acropolis, I couldn't see the Acropolis because
Oh,
it was so snowy. I couldn't
wow.
see anything. I was like, oh, I can't see the Parthenon from here. All right. So, yeah, it was a very cool experience. And Athens came to a halt. I mean, what little traffic we had going on at that time, it was just completely quiet and silent. And you know, Sundays in Greece are a very quiet experience, but this was ultra quiet. Like, this was like nothing I'd ever experienced before. So it was very cool. And, you know, it was one of those things that I thought, well, if I hadn't been living in Athens, I wouldn't have seen it. And I wouldn't have known all these things. You know, there's so much about Greek culture and history that I've learned from living in Athens that I probably would not have gotten if I had been living on an island. As much as the islands are still very traditional, they're just, I have to say that the cultural history of a lot of things that we, like, as the world thinks of Greece, are because they've happened in Athens, you know, or at an ancient site nearby, you know. So it's where those ancient, the big ancient sites in Greece are happening, or where those. So if you think of like Olympia and Delphi and Mount Olympus, those are where those big things happen. And those are almost all on the mainland.
So, oh, yeah.
You know, even though we all think of coming to Greece and going to the Greek islands, like, the mainland is where the real big history things, a lot of the big history things are. And so it's, that's one of the main reasons, at least for me, that I like living in Athens.
Amazing. Yeah. It makes me wish I would have dived a little bit deeper when I was there. And I think I would have probably got, you know, a little bit more out of it for sure, and enjoyed my time in Athens a little better. But well, thank you so much for talking about Athens and going into details of some of that Greek hospitality and that culture. If people want to keep up with you and your adventures, how can they do that?
So you can either follow my blog. I don't write as often as I used to because I've now started a YouTube channel, which is also called A Girl and Her Passport. I usually upload a video once a week. And if you want to keep up with more day-to-day things or see beautiful pictures of Greece, you can find me on Instagram at A Girl and Her Passport.
I am definitely sad that when I went to Athens, I didn't have the best experiences, but that's okay. It gives me a reason to go back. During my time, there was definitely some circumstances that were outside of my control. Like, it was super duper hot. There were wildfires going on, and I had a few things with my accommodation that wasn't the best. So all in all, that contributed to my overall feeling. But I do have to say, the people were very nice. The sights were absolutely beautiful. And some of the food I had was spectacular. And here's the thing, I think when you don't have the best experience in a place, doesn't mean it's bad or that you shouldn't go back and give it a second shot, but maybe changing your perspective a little bit. I know I have to. So next time I go to Athens, it'll definitely be a better experience, especially now that I know a little bit more details about the area. And with someone like Tiffany, who's putting out some killer content online, I will be sure to check out all of her tips and details for the best trip possible. For the show notes of this page with extras that we did not discuss, such as restaurants and other things to try and things to do, please go to nomadicfoodist.com/Athens. That's nomadicfoodist.com/Athens for all those details. We couldn't fit everything in that we wanted to talk about today, and in fact, it was barely scratching the surface. So Tiffany has a bunch of other suggestions that you will need to have the very best vacation and holiday in Athens. If you like this episode, please hit the subscribe button so that every week you get a delicious destination and amazing interviews with wonderful people from around the world. Thank you again for listening, and remember, eat with an adventurous heart no matter where you go.